gentleman named Chris Collins, who was 10 years old at the time, was living in Macon, and he watched this team and these guys as they made this this amazing baseball run. So he saw it through the eyes of a boy. You know, these were his heroes. And so he contacted me and laid it out a little bit. You know, we get a lot of emails like that at SI, but it's something about this one definitely intrigued me. So I called him back, talked a little bit. You know, it sounded good, but it wasn't until I met Lynn Sweet and saw him and got a chance to talk to him that I was really sold on it, because just he's a complicated guy. He's a charismatic guy. And I was able, even meeting him now at the point he was in his late 60s, I could see who he'd been back then.
A complicated guy and certainly an unorthodox coach and teacher. I love how you got into this book before we even take to the ball field, just some of his interesting methods in the classroom.
Oh, yeah. My wife's a teacher. My grandmother's a teacher. So I ate this stuff up, just this idea of Lynn coming into this super conservative town where everything had always been done by the book. And the first thing he does is just throw out the grammar textbooks, and he starts introducing these books that, you know, in 1966, 67, reading books like Brave New World, that was not something that was done in a small town like Macon. And asking these kids to think bigger, to think out of the box, you know, write your obituary for me. You know, I want you to think about not just what you're doing now, but what you're going to do down the line. You know, getting students to think of him as an equal rather than as authority figure. It was during an era when there was a fair amount of disciplining, you know, paddling of kids, things like that. And Lynn never had to resort to that because he had earned the students' respect and they also liked him.
There was also just no emphasis on baseball at the time. I know this is an entirely different story, but it made me think of The Rookie, the true story with the movie with Dennis Quaid, where they're in Texas and the emphasis was football. At Macon High School at the time, you had to scratch and claw just to get equipment. Talk about the efforts he made and how he was recruited to become, Lynn Sweet was recruited to become baseball coach.
No one wanted to coach. They'd had a succession of coaches who'd been pulled from the school and coached 1 year and then bowed out, and the most recent one had been the football coach, Jack Burns, who was a great football coach, but just really had no interest in baseball. And so, you know, they were getting too close to the season, and they needed a coach, and they sort of asked the faculty, and there's only, you know, a couple dozen faculty. And it finally was the parents who sort of went after Sweet a bit and said, hey, you know, we like you as a teacher, our kids like you, give it a shot. He'd played some softball with a couple of them. But as you said, you know, this was a place where football and basketball were king at the time, and even track, you know, from what the guys told me, was more important than baseball. It was in the spring, it was horrible weather, the team wasn't very good. You know, a couple seasons earlier, they'd only won one game. They had a bunch of young talent coming up, but that wasn't necessarily apparent at the time. You know, these guys they're going to Commodore's games and trying to get old bats, broken bats, and they tape them up with duct tape. You know, they find old baseballs and use them until they're down to the string. It certainly was not, you know, they have 12 kids on the team, maybe 13, and a couple of them probably weren't very good. It was that kind of operation, but they all loved it.
Yeah, something that I found particularly funny was the area behind second base was also the landing point for the discus.
Yes, and so, you know, talking to center, the outfielders, they told me, you really just had to learn to play it that way. Like, the ball might just stop. And if there was a short blooper, it might just go thunk and land in that divot there.
I know a lot of people around here would be familiar with what Macon High School was, but can we talk about just going back 41 years and what high school sports were at the time and how a team like Macon would end up playing a team like Waukegan and how there were so many smaller schools around Central Illinois?
Yeah, this is what I find really compelling is this idea, you know, much like Hoosiers, the movie, since there wasn't a class system, you had a chance to advance all the way, but very few schools did. I mean, you'd get a school of maybe 500 or 600 kids might make it to the state playoffs, which were the final eight teams in Peoria. But you had to win. You had to win more games than an NCAA team has to win during March Madness to get there. So you're talking about defying the odds again and again in the regional and the sectional level and going up. So, you know, Macon's playing schools that are, you know, Macon has 220 kids, and they're playing schools that first they're playing 1,000-kid schools from Decatur and then it's moving up. And then when they play Lane Tech, and there's a school that at the time was over 5,000 students, and they were all boys, and there was this huge powerhouse. You know, and they play Waukegan, which had 2,000-plus kids and players on their way to the major leagues, and where they had, you know, these tremendous cuts from the team, and Macon just had 12 kids, and whoever showed up, and that was their team.
Then the 1970 season rolls around, and they're really, really good, and then this technicality cancels their run for the championship. They didn't do anything wrong, but any kind of lessons to be learned there or some kind of resolve just in the way they played the next season?
Yeah, you know, I think it was toughest because there were a couple of seniors who didn't get to come back. And, you know, to this day, a lot of the guys talk about that 70 team might have been more talented. And they don't know how far they might have gone had they had a chance. I think coming back, there was definitely a resolve. And there was a sense that, well, you know, we never did lose. So, you know, there's no reason we shouldn't think we're that good. So even though they came from this tiny town without any baseball history, in talking to these players, you know, they really were confident at the time. They really felt, hey, we can compete with these guys. There's no reason why we can't. And, you know, I think part of it was having Sweet come back. And, you know, in the interim, the school had fired him as baseball coach. And some of the students and parents rallied around him a bit and got him back in there. So they had a sense of a little bit of us against the world, I think, which helped them.
Yeah, and maybe they didn't realize quite how good they were, and maybe didn't even realize finishing second, the way that the celebration went afterwards, maybe it sunk in a little more what had happened to them.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's one of those electric moments when you're that age. Personally, you know, I'm turning 39, and I still remember with amazing clarity these moments from my high school sports career. And I think there's a couple of those guys, John Henneberry especially, who was the lefty pitcher with the big, slow curveball, who they understood at the time how rare this moment was for them to have this experience. But the rest of them were just high school kids. Hey, you know, it's a great run kind of thing.
Now, the trophy, is that right, sitting in a gas station now? Or
yeah, it's a gas station. When you first come into Macon, you know, you don't even go to town. It's right off the highway there. And that's one of the things that first drew me to the story of this idea, you know, what's happened in these intervening 40 years where this was the proudest moment, proudest sports moment at least, and one of the proudest moments of this town at the time. And now this trophy's in a gas station, you know, not forgotten, but it's on a sort of dusty higher shelf. There's a couple of things in front of it. It's next to the Jack Daniels. You know, what happened in those intervening 40 years for this to lose its permanence, for this disintegration of collective memory, which is part of what intrigued me.
Is this book accomplishing some of maybe what you'd hope for this region and bring new appreciation for such a small school team to have gotten so far?
Yeah, I'm not even sure how much of it. Hey, obviously, the book is a catalyst, but what I thought was impressive, you know, I did a book signing there in Decatur at the public library, and the whole team, except for Brian Snicker, who's currently the third base coach for the Braves, so the whole team, other than the members who are now deceased, came out. And they sat there, and about 10 minutes into this talk, you know, over 300 people showed up to this. You know, the woman who introduced it to the library looked out at this crowd, and they'd had to open an extra room and said, did y'all leave anyone in Macon tonight, you know? And the players just talked about it. And then Steve Scherzer comes in a little late, and he gets a standing ovation. And just to see this, the power of a small town like that, you know, raising up its high school baseball heroes from four decades ago, I can't imagine that happening. You know, where I went to high school, people have forgotten a lot of that. So it was really touching to see it and to see the power of that community.